It is Wednesday, and the Chicago Cubs stink.
They sure do, and we're going to talk all about it. We also have a very special guest representing the Pittsburgh Pirates fan base. Excited to talk to him. We're going to ask me how concerned I am about the Mariners of Seattle. James Wood is finally a big leaguer, and we will pay our tribute to one Orlando Cepeda. It's Wednesday. It's Baseball Barbercast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbercast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows Cubs fans will have to wait another 108 years until they are good again. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and you did it once. Like, you could do it again.
Yeah, what's another century of losing, or at least not winning is maybe the better way to put it. Yes, Jake, on this episode, we have to talk about the Cubs. I know on Monday, we brought back one of our favorite segments, Sorry for Your Mentions, to address the poor people managing the @Cubs Twitter account, stuck with some folks, you know, really disappointed with the final scores they've been posting because those final scores have been not in the Cubs' favor. We received a great email from Derek talking about how he was basically writing us an email expressing many of those same sentiments, only to listen to our podcast and hear that the rest of the fan base was hearing something very similar. Yes, we are going to start this show talking about the Cubs. The last place Chicago Cubs, Jake. This is not going well. This is not awesome, as our friend Mike Rooney would say.
No.
And I think while we were laughing at just, you know, the fans' misery on Monday, I think we should, after they lost again to the Phillies last night, no shame in losing to the Phillies, but when you do lose at home and Michael Mercado, a rookie, kind of just dominates you for five innings, It's not a good feeling, and they're giving us very few reasons to feel like they're going to claw their way out of this. No, their season is not completely toast, but we are heading in that direction, and with the trade deadline coming up later this month, there may be some tough decisions for Mr. Jed Hoyer and co. So where would you like to start as we try to evaluate the Chicago Cubs?
So I would like to start with talking about the National League wild card crap fest, because at this point, we are looking for any reason at all to cross any of these teams off a list. Now, time will do the job for us, certainly. But when we are looking at, I believe it is every team in the National League except for the Rockies and the Marlins are theoretically playoff contenders, we are really hoping that people fall out of that mix to make our lives easier, right? And to add, frankly, some sellers to the deadline. The market needs buyers and the market needs sellers. And right now, we do not have enough sellers willing to sell. And the Chicago Cubs recently have begun to separate themselves in a bad way.
Yeah. I mean, they are now 5.5 back. They're 39-47. They've lost 7 of their last 10. Their run differential has sunk to minus 32. And now, again, 5.5 at this point, in theory, is not impossible, but there's 6 teams ahead of them before you even get to that third wildcard spot. And ultimately, when you look at how they've been playing and who they are working with, where is the upside here, right? Like, when we think back to what we thought this team could be, what is it? How have they failed to meet those expectations? And, you know, it's interesting because there are a lot of teams right now where you look at in this mix or in the postseason mix. And, you know, we'll talk about the Mariners here in a second, where some of their best players have been downright atrocious. That's the interesting thing with the Cubs. You know, when you look at their lineup, no one has necessarily been horrible. You know, Christopher Morel, I would say, over the last month or so has bordered on horrible. But you look at the OPS pluses, and they're not that bad. They're not that bad, right? Hap's above average. Bellinger's above average. Seiya Suzuki's above average. Nico Horner's around average. Michael Busch, a big addition. He has been really good for them. But no one is great. And when your bullpen is not very good, that is enough of a recipe to lose a lot of close games, which, of course, when Craig Counsell is your manager, is not necessarily part of the plan. And any sort of edge you thought you were getting from giving a manager the most money ever given to a manager has not necessarily been felt. Not that it is Craig Counsell's fault, but it is also, he does not seem to be helping in some sort of magical way.
When we were at the MLB Combine, a front office person said to us, boy, Jed Hoyer can find you a whole lot of fives. I'm going to now explain that sentence. Jed Hoyer is the president of baseball operations for the Chicago Cubs. And a five, in the context of baseball scouting, two is the bottom, eight is the top, five is the middle. Anything above or below five is standard deviation, right? So five is an average big leaguer. Jed Hoyer can find you a whole lot of fives. What he has not been able to find, at least in this contention cycle, at least in this window with this group, is a MF-er, is a game changer, is a franchise-altering force who is a perennial all-star who shows up on the top of MVP lists every year. When you look around the league, you gotta have one of those guys, really. Like, the core, frankly, is not that good. It is not that exciting or exhilarating. It is not horrendous. And that is why I thought this team would win the division, because they had so many solid players, but they just don't have anybody who is going to just win it on their own. Ian Happ is very good. Cody Bellinger is really good. Seiya Suzuki is really good. That's really good. But you know what? The point is not to be really good. It is to be elite. And with the Phillies rolling in, a team that is stocked with that type of player, that is kind of created this, you know, comparison last night for me. Even though Harper and Schwarber are out, right? It still just felt like Trey Turner is something that the Cubs don't have. Dansby Swanson's not that guy.
No. And, you know, when they extend Hap and they bring in Suzuki, we've seen Suzuki play at like a more of a role six level player. I would say Bellinger certainly was that last year. Swanson, we've seen be that level player. It's just not quite enough. Now, in their defense, okay, you look around the rest of that National League mess. I mean, all right. Obviously, you know, the teams right ahead of them, the Reds and the Nationals, who are still multiple games under 500, the Pirates, yeah, they've started to find, obviously, Ellie De La Cruz, right? We've seen that with Paul Skenes with the Pirates. The Nationals, I mean, even C.J. Abrams, right, is playing like a far more impactful player than, you know, this season when he's been on than anybody that the Cubs have been having. But I don't know. It's just, to me, it also still might just be as simple as when your bullpen's not very good, and your offense is average. You're always, you know how teams often say, very cliche, is like, we're always in it. They are a team that is always, like, it's not that they're not in it. They're in it in a way that the other team is always in it against the Cubs. that is a problem. That is a situation because of the offense being inconsistent and because of the bullpen not being very good. The other team is always in it against the Cubs. And it just puts them in a very, very difficult spot. And that gets back to the council thing where it's like, listen, he only has the buttons in front of him that he can press. And so far, those buttons have not been nearly effective enough.
So the last thing I'll say is, a year ago, we were in a similar situation with the Cubs where they smelled like deadline sellers, and then they got really hot. And then remember Dansby Swanson like called Jed Hoyer and was like, don't sell. And he was like, okay. Right. And they were kind of in it until their pants fell down in September. The Cubs could get hot and crawl back into it very easily. Again, the National League is mediocre. But I had a friend text me this morning about the Cubs, and that really stuck with this stuck with me. Thinking about selling was not the game plan in year one of Craig Counsell.
Yes.
That is that simple.
That's a fact. Fact. Yep. And I'm so glad you mentioned last year, though, because I did want to bring that up, right? Cubs right now are 39 and 47. Last year, on July 3rd, they were 38 and 45. And ironically, they had just lost a series opener in Milwaukee. Okay, so this is kind of like where we're just feeling. But then they really, really heated up. They had like an 8-game winning streak from July 21st to July 29th, and that got them back to 53 and 51. And then they were like, all right, can't do it. we can't go backwards. And then, as you mentioned, you know, catastrophically bad down the stretch, and they ultimately became irrelevant. Maybe we were headed to, but I wonder if that exact same thing that they just went through, whether Craig Counsell was there or not, makes them more willing to say, listen, we got to be realistic about this, and we need, if we have the opportunity, you know, to set us up better for next year. Now, that's the other question, is what are actually the trade chips that they have? That's a much tougher question to answer. I don't, there are not as many like super obvious guys to move. I know there were like that are on shorter term deals. And I think that's where they really are kind of maybe stuck with what they have. But I don't know. I mean, obviously Bellinger, I guess, is the one that, but that's kind of a weird contract to try and move considering he has player options.
Cubs fans, let us know how you feeling.
This is
a safe space. I do agree with you that the bar is now higher. Like last year they were on the line and they chose not to sell, and it didn't really work. And so I would imagine that now they need to be even more in it for them to buy or to stand pat. Jordan, from one team that doesn't seem like it can hit the baseball to a team that certainly cannot hit the baseball, I want to discuss the Seattle Mariners, who last night fell to the Baltimore Orioles by a minuscule score of 2-0. That is not any runs for the Mariners. Grayson Rodriguez
was
sensational for the Birds. The Mariners have not looked good, particularly at the plate all season long. I believe they have the lowest team batting average in baseball, and we all know how important batting average is. But it is embarrassing just because the Mariners offseason, like, they were like, we need to get guys who have higher batting averages and put the ball in play more. And they have just not done that. And so the Mariners sit on July 3rd, three games up in the AL West above the Astros, who just lurk around. They're the boogeyman. Jordan, I want you to open thesaurus.com and I want you to type panic into the search bar, and I want you to click enter, and I want you to pick out one synonym for panic that describes where you are at right now as a Mariners supporter.
All right. So a lot of options here. We've got alarm, confusion. Confusion is an interesting one. I don't know if I would use that one. Consternation is strong. I think trepidation and dread, I think trepidation is more accurate than dread. I think where, of course, you mentioned the Astros, you know, they lost last night, so, you know, that gap didn't close, but they've lost. I mean, the Mariners were 10 up, you know, 20 minutes ago, right? And while we knew that lead was probably not going to hold, they're in a situation now, right? I mean, when we talk about a team like the Cubs, is they fall. You have to accept reality. The Mariners situation, it's different because it's like you can't not sell, you're seven games up and you're in first place. Like, this is the team. Like, you still have to go for it. You still have to try and win the division. That's still on the table for them, obviously, right? And the reason that they're still in this position is because of the margins that they're still able to play with because of how good the pitching has been. But when we say they can't hit, I mean, yes, it is the lowest batting average in the league. And yes, batting average is historically low. But if you're the lowest batting average in a historically low batting average time, now we're talking about truly, I mean, batting average does matter. If you cannot score runs, especially at home, they are currently the worst hitting team at home, or one of the worst hitting teams at home of all time. However, they are also simultaneously one of the best pitching teams at home of all time. What the Mariners are currently dealing with is one of, you know, because of a combination of their roster construction and their ballpark, is a park factor combination that is one of the more extreme situations we've ever seen. And at the same time, what does the panic lead to, right? What is the worry? It's the worry is that you fall behind Houston. Okay, fine. That was always, you know, you go back to the beginning of the season, them, you know, not winning the division because the Astros do. That's not necessarily a shock. So that's a little bit different than some of these other disappointing teams that we're talking about. But it's how do you get out of this? And it's how desperate are you willing to change something? Or are you stuck with the guys you have and hope that they get better? Because, man, I mean, listen, if Julio is going to hit like this, it's like, all right, send him down. All right, who are you calling up? Who's going to be better than this? You know, he's still giving you, you know, gold glove defense in center field. I don't know, but he's been horrible. He's been absolutely atrocious. And the Polanco has been terrible. Like, there's so few guys that have actually done what they anywhere close to what they could have hoped, right? It's not a bunch of average. It's a bunch of underperformance. So I think that they have obviously played themselves into a very precarious situation. I think that because of, as we talked about, the floor that they have established with the pitching, they're still going to be in it no matter what. But I'm really curious to see how desperate they are to actually add versus just pray that it gets better.
To me, it is a very simple question to which the answer is no. Can this offense win a World Series?
Yeah.
No, it cannot. Can this pitching staff? Oh, yeah. Yes, it certainly can. This is one of the best rotations we've seen in the 21st century, straight up. But simply, these guys look like they're using pool noodles. Okay, they look blindfolded. They look lost. And it's unfortunate because of what the rotation is giving. This is an opportunity, a golden one for the Seattle Mariners. Teams spend years dreaming and working and developing pitchers to get to this point where this Mariners rotation is at. And that door is way open, and they just haven't been able to complete it on the offensive side. And that's so unfortunate.
Yeah, and like to be that, to every year they have proven more and more how good they are at pitching, and every year they have proven more and more how bad they are at identifying hitting and developing it. And because of that, I don't know what has to change there, but that is what is going because clearly we're just working in two extremes right now, and maybe that is going to end up being a situation where they still manage to get into the postseason and then just pitch their way through the playoffs. But this version right now is completely untenable, especially when you're playing good teams like Baltimore.
My idea for the Seattle Mariners is very simple. Bigger bats. Just get bigger bats, wider bats, longer bats.
That's fine with me. You know, we've talked about what should we do to how can we help offense? How can we help the worst offenses? Sure. Let's get them. We'll give them some corks. Get them some corks. Maybe you get records. One metal bat. You know, one guy can swing a DeMarini in there if he really wants to. I think we should be open to some opportunities like that.
All right, Jordan. Let's take a quick break, and when we return, we'll be joined by the number one Pirates fan in the universe, certainly in Pittsburgh, Mr. Saxboy himself. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. We are now very excited to be joined by another fine gentleman with a beard wearing a Pirates hat. It is not just me on this podcast anymore. It is one of our favorite people on social media. It is Mr. @SaxboyBilly18 himself. Saxboy, my dear friend, welcome to Baseball Barbacast. It is so good to have you.
Gentlemen, thanks for having me and welcome to my room. Welcome to you. They can see my room. Look, there's my melatonin right there, and there's my Lexapro. And it's quite a room, huh?
It's good to have more SSRI representation on this podcast. We really, really love that. Mr. Sax Boy, there are probably many people listening who have no idea who you are, and I think that's okay. If you meet someone at like a brunch or like a barbecue setting, and they're like,
an elevator pitch.
What do you do? Why are you here? Can you please do that now?
I say I follow the Pittsburgh Pirates around Grateful Dead style, and make comedy videos and sell thrift online at saxboyshop.com. That's what I tell them.
Well, and let me tell you, you are doing that to the maximum. And I would say that the reason we wanted to have you on is to kind of explain this venture and what prompted it. Because while earlier this season we started seeing your videos as someone, again, who's following the Pirates around the country amidst a very interesting season, I think the video that you posted when Paul Skenes got called up celebrating, and of course, as we have often referenced, dancing in your Pittsburgh basement, I think that kind of set the tone for the energy that you are bringing. Your bio on Twitter, the intersection of Pittsburgh Pirates fandom and culture, which is already on its own a very funny combination. But how does this begin for you? Because clearly you are a lifelong Pirates fan, but this seems to be a newer venture. So how did we get here?
So yeah, lifelong Pirates fan, Three Rivers, Jason Kendall, Ed Sprague, the Freak Show team in 97. That was got me hooked, that those 78 wins or whatever we ended up with. And, on a PNC. And then I left Pittsburgh in 2009 I dropped out of college and moved to New York City to pursue comedy. And then about 6 years into that pursuit, I got a job in the beer industry and pushed comedy to the side. And I started drinking, boys. And we can just basically fast forward life about 10 years.
That's
and,
fine.
Yeah. I'm in Mongolia last year. Like, I have ridden this train way off the tracks. And I swear to say, I'll say that for my podcast, maybe. But I moved back to Pittsburgh in the attempt to start early sobriety and took a couple months, but I got it December 27th. And I was looking for something to do.
6 months.
Just hit it, baby. I just hit it in Cincinnati. There's a crazy story there too. But I was looking for something to do in early sobriety and basically take the energy I was putting into that, that sauce, that
naughty water,
and just kind of flip it to something else. And I was like, well, I follow the Pirates all the time, and I had a group chat with my friends. We're always cutting up. Shout out West Coast Zeke and Braddock Ben. And I was like, you know what? I'll start making videos. Rather than just be like a passive observer of Pirates Twitter, which is a spectacle and something, it is something that has been rolling along here since like 2009. And rather than just be a passenger, I'm going to be a participant. And it's crazy, man. It's just crazy how just through my sobriety, how everything just kind of progressed very natural, very organically.
And that's the thing that I have really enjoyed watching your stuff is it's always good. It's always funny. I never watch a Saxboy video and don't laugh. And even as someone who does not follow the Pirates religiously, thank God for my own mental health, right? I enjoy all the things that you have been putting out. And I highly recommend people to just go watch it. It is the perfect combination of like absurdity and passion and joy and all of these things kind of coming together. And I think like when I really realized that you had gone to a next level is when I showed up in Pittsburgh for the Skeens debut and I got into the press box and all of the Pirates beat reporters were just talking about like, oh, can't wait to see what Saxboy's going to post today. And it's like, this is the Paul Skeens debut, respectfully. Like maybe that should be our focus. So my next question for you, Mr. Boy, is Pirates fandom as a thing. I think it is fair to say that in the 21st century, no team has been as consistently underwhelming and frankly bad than the Pirates. I think the Mariners have an argument. I think the Royals, except for their little blip of success, has an argument, except they won a World Series. And the Mariners won the most games in MLB history in 2001.
Yeah.
And they made, they seem to be moving in a more obvious right direction. The Pirates are probably 30 of 30 in terms of like amount of on-field joy brought to the fan base. How does that impact the culture of following the team?
I mean, I want to go in a time machine and like direct my mom instead of like taking me to Three Rivers, like go to the Igloo, go to the Civic Arena. Or like something else, get me into football, or I don't know, but it's just like ingrained. It's like I cannot tell you how much of a baseball town this actually is, because people's grandparents and people's grandparents before the Steelers were around, and even during the Steelers, it was a baseball town. And this is a city that's very deep rooted in history and like grandparents did this and he got shot at the railroad track and Johnny went down to the
and people to don't
five
leave.
And dime and the pie and Roberto Clemente was there. And it's like it's such a baseball town. But it's just, you know, we've just been totally inept and irrelevant, except for 3 years, 13 to 15, for my entire life. I talk about the 97 Freak Show team like it's like somebody would talk about like the 62 Yankees or something. I don't know if that's a correct year, if the Yankees were good that year, but it's like, but like the 79 Yankees.
Good job. Just name a random year they did probably win the World Series. They did win the World Series in 62.
Oh, so you could forget the
57 Yankees. Brewers. Everybody talks about the 57 Yankees.
Right. but it is, I just want to say, like, that's the thing, though, is, you know, fans of teams that go through this, you know, you crave, it's such a low ceiling that you're, or low floor or ceiling that you're kind of craving to get back to. And that's why, you know, I felt that Jake was there for the Skeens debut. I was there for Skeens against the Dodgers. Like, it's there. And I've said this. I said this when I saw in Cincinnati. That's another team. If there is another franchise that has an argument for a similar kind of thing, at least this century, maybe not all time, but this century, they're just desperate. They want it. They want a reason to go crazy. They want to so badly. And so you feel that in everything that you do, and just Pirates fans, the way they talk about it. And so now with Skeens and some of the pitchers, you know, you start to feel that. But how has it evolved? Yeah, from the course of the season, whether it is Skeens, and I'm most interested in your actual travels, because that's also the fun thing about watching you do this, you know, traveling on a budget, going, you know, finding a way to these different major league cities on various, we'll say, thrifty airlines. what has your experience been on those trips?
Is Frontier Airlines a sponsor? Is that why you're being skirting around
it? They won't be anymore. No, I'm just, listen, we shout out brands that we probably shouldn't all the time, so we're safe there. But was that always part of the plan, is traveling around, or as you've kind of gotten more attention online, you've been kind of motivated to you know, get on the road no matter what it takes?
So I got the ballpark pass in Pittsburgh, which is the best deal in baseball. Find me a better deal. 40 bucks a month, unlimited general admission seats. And I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go to every single game. And then I was just sitting there. And I go do Pirates thrifting for fun, just to, like, you know, oh, like, look at me right now. What am I wearing?
McLouth.
Nate McLouth.
Lock it in.
McLouth red trim, okay? Mm-hmm. And I just do it for fun.
The blondest, you know, Dominican.
Oh, yeah. All-time video with him on the Orioles. But and people are like, we'll buy it. So I was like, you know what? You know what would be kind of crazy? If I just go to every Pirates game. Because that will keep the interest up and people might get excited about the videos. And then I was like, you know what, let's do it. Started with Milwaukee, and I've been to 8 cities so far. I travel dirt cheap. I find the cheapest way possible to travel to the city. And then I, when I'm at the city, I'll stay at like the cheapest Airbnb possible. Like, I was just in Atlanta and I stayed in like somebody's basement where there was just like basically an IKEA shower curtain in between rooms, and it was like 6 of us in a basement. And, you know, when I get to these cities, I rent a bicycle. I'll either do the bike share or I'll go to a bike shop and rent a bike. And so you can travel really inexpensively. And that's something, if you're listening to this and you want to go, like, everybody here wants to go to every stadium, right? It's not as expensive as you think if you do it on a budget. And budget, the key word, you know, I'm sleeping at airports sometimes because I'm taking any flight that's cheap, right? So if the flight is late at night, I'll just crash at the airport until like 6 a.m. to save room and board. You know what I mean? And
these are the lengths you're going to watch Jared Triolo.
To watch
Colin Holderman come in for the Colin Holds. I mean, Yeah, but I guess my question is, like, what is your relationship with the actual team? Has your relationship with the team changed at all? Has it? It's been there your whole life, right? But, like, have you become a new level of fan? Because I don't know. You mentioned you were in Mongolia. I don't know how close you were following the Pirates at that point.
I was
point.
Getting up at 7 a.m. and watching the Pirates.
Okay, so there you go. So
I'm a legit fan, like,
100%. No, yeah. I know. So, how is your relationship? You've been traveling and following them. Yeah.
How's it changed?
It's kind of like, when I worked in TV in New York City for like 5 years, and it's kind of like I equivalent to that, because I'm seeing behind the curtain of the actual production side of baseball. Like, especially like at the ballpark, how they follow the same script around, how it's so repetitive and it's the same thing over and over again. So I'm just kind of, it's like I'm seeing the wizard behind the curtain and this grandiose thing of, you know, this spectacle of the baseball field. It's like I'm now seeing it as just like a job. Like I'm seeing them as a job for these baseball players. And I never was really like ride or die, like, oh, the Pirates lose, I'm going to go crazy and share my thoughts. Like, that's just insane. It's a modern miracle that these players are playing Major League Baseball games. You know how hard it is to be a Major League Baseball player? It's next to impossible. So I never rag on the players. And it's I see it as just kind of like, yeah, like a job.
And I also love, too, that, like, you know, as we kind of wrap here, like, I noticed, I think you tweeted at some point that the team is like almost exactly 500 when you've been in attendance this year. And I don't think you've been at every single game, but well over half of them.
52. I mean, it seems 52 like, games.
52. Okay. So are they at exactly 500 when you're, or are they two
no,
games
after
over?
After yesterday, I'm two games below now.
Two games below. Okay.
Or sorry, one game below.
One game below. But again, like, you have had this hilarious balance of, and the Pirates have been around, roughly around 500 for a lot of the season anyway, so it makes sense. But as you mentioned, you're not really concerned necessarily about the result, right? Like, you're just a Pirates fan. You just want to be there when the Pirates are playing baseball. And so you get to live the highs of a skiing start, and the lows, you're like, hey, whatever, I'll be back tomorrow. It's the same thing with the team, right? Like, that's the thing. When you see these teams, we talk about this all the time with actual players. I think about this when I saw the Blue Jays recently have like the worst loss of their season. I say it all the time, right? It's like, is it the greatest thing in the world that you get to come back the next day and play? Or is it like, oh my God, they have to play again tomorrow? And when you are actually riding this wave with the team, you clearly, I imagine, you're like, oh hell yeah, there's another game tomorrow. I don't care how bad the loss was tonight. Is that accurate?
You get to like kind of feel percent. That? Yeah, 1,000%. Yeah. I feel like,
especially when you're
like,
going.
Get me on that plane, Pirates. Come on.
Oh, careful. No, we'll see. 100%. Careful what you wish for.
I think a lot of Pittsburghers, they view it through like a football landscape, right? Because they got football brains. That's how their brains developed. And every game is like, No, it's baseball. It's a slog. And if you pull back, you know, we're just a couple games below 500. So, yes, absolutely.
But what I love is, right, ball players are always like, well, you can't get too high. And you can't get too low. You got to stay even keeled. Sax boy doesn't get too low, but he does get too high, baby. He does get too high. When the Pirates are cooking and they're winning and they're throwing up W's, you bring that energy and you bring that joy, and that's what I love about it. My last question for you is, I heard from a source that you ran into Ben Cherington at the airport. And my question is, how long did you talk to him for in minutes?
In minutes? I'll give you seconds. Let's call it 78 seconds.
So 78 seconds.
That's what is that? Yeah, 78 seconds. A buck 16. Okay. A buck 16.
Not multiple minutes is your point.
I was flying back from Milwaukee to Pittsburgh because I had to go to Pittsburgh for a doctor's appointment, and I saw him in first class. He's doing one of these things with eyeballs, like just kind of, and I went up to him in the airport. I was like, hey man. I wanted to thank him. Like, honestly, I thanked him because after that Archer trade in 19, the team was in just like absolute no man's land. And he came along and he got my interest back up with the Pirates. And, you know, you can kind of say, and I thanked him for that because since the second he got hired, I was back in again. And you could say whatever you want about his performance. It's a little rocky road ice cream. It's a little this, a little that. But we have starting pitching for like the first time in my entire lifetime. We have stud starting pitching that we'll have the next 5-6 years. So I thanked him and I said, good luck. And I said, I'll be riding with him. Literally, I'll be at every single away series. And I'll probably see you on an American Airlines flight pretty soon. So you better get to know me.
Yeah, he doesn't have a choice now, but I'm sure Ben is well aware of the support you're giving his team. Mr. Boy, Mr. Sax, I guess that's
Thanks,
a good place
guys.
To end. Why are you Sax Boy? And then we'll say goodbye.
It's an inside joke. I have a theory that You can find it. Like when I do memes, when I send a meme, I have a theory that you can find a picture of Bill Clinton doing anything. So if I just like want to send a meme, I'll just be like Bill Clinton on a podcast looking confused. You can Google search that and you can find that picture probably. And then I just, it's a long story, but that's what Saxophone is from, his Arsenio, what won him the election.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, wow. Like, all right. Then that
Biden
went a lot
needs
deep.
An Arsenio moment.
He does. Yeah. Get that guy out.
All right.
Get
wow.
That guy
okay. Well, we really swerved there. Mr. Sax Boy Billy 18. This was a delight.
Thanks,
good
guys.
Luck
and,
on
and
your
thanks
venture
for the
call.
Support and for boosting it and sharing it and stuff.
Of course. Keep up the great work and good luck with whatever and wherever is next for you.
Whatever this is. All right. Thanks, guys.
And welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbacast. Jake Bitz, George Schusterman, Sax Boy. What a delight. That guy, like, when people like him burst onto the scene and bubble up from the internet muck with genuine affection for the sport and a unique perspective on it, it fills my heart. It really does, because there's so much blech. And so when we get a Yahoo, you know, it fires me up.
Yeah, I would say passion usually shines through in a lot of cases like this, especially when you are genuinely very funny. So
that's a funny guy.
He is very good. While we were talking to Mr. Sax Boy, we got a little bit of news. So we're going to hit that quickly. Then we're going to talk about James Wood. And then we are going to talk about Orlando Cepeda. So quickly, a trade, maybe our first major trade of this here month. We'll see how much action we get later on. It's a very, very simple one. It is Aaron Civale, the right-handed pitcher for the Tampa Bay Rays, being traded to the Milwaukee Brewers for a infield prospect named Gregory Barrios, who is one of their top 30 prospects, having a nice season in high A, shortstop. Not a lot of power, but he is a solid, just totally solid prospect. Now, Aaron Civale is a very interesting pitcher. Aaron Civale throws like 7 different pitches. He was acquired by Tampa Bay from Cleveland. And we saw him kind of start to change some things. We saw him get have some success with Tampa Bay last year. And then this year, it just wasn't really quite clicking. Like a lot of the Rays pitching staff, he has underperformed, an ERA over 5. And the Brewers, if they are going to win this division and make a push in the playoffs, we have been saying all season, who in the world is going to start one of their second playoff games? I know Tobias Myers has kind of emerged recently for them behind Freddy Peralta. They need starting pitching very, very, very badly. And Aaron Civale, under team control for this year and next, is definitely someone who has at least been healthy. He throws a bunch of different pitches. And I'm very curious to see what changes he makes, because for a pitcher to go from Cleveland to Tampa Bay to Milwaukee, we are really getting a full, you know, display of the nerds telling him what to throw, when to throw it. And I'm curious to see if he can find his best self in Milwaukee.
We talk about the idea sometimes of developmental meat on the bone, and this is most apt when we're discussing like a small school pitcher who went to East Schmendrick State Tech. And it's like, wow, if you respect to that guy's, you know, pitching coach at college, like you get that guy into a big league organization, there's a lot we can do here. I think this is in some ways the opposite of that. I mean, there's always things you can improve on and develop and whatever. But like, you go from Cleveland to Tampa to Milwaukee, like that is about as close as you can go to having no stone left unturned. If the Brewers trade him to the Mariners, yeah, then we've yeah, hit the Mount Rushmore, yeah, of nerd right, pitching development.
Well, I wouldn't put it past him next year. But yeah, so we'll see. I mean, Brewers just desperately need a pitching. And this makes sense to at least jump at 1-2, because they can't really wait anymore. Their rotation is too decimated to be too patient. So that's an interesting little trade. We will see what the next trade is. And also, I would say the other thing is Tampa Bay trading away one of their main starting pitchers. That is significant. If they
especially
become real sellers,
they've been better.
Yeah. They have been better, right. And I know Taj Bradley's been awesome, and maybe they have some, but like, that is an interesting sign. Maybe they don't think Civale is going to help them no matter what, even the rest of this year, if they do think they're still in it. But the Rays deciding to be sellers, if this is an example of that, is a very big deal. So that I will just say, let's just put that out there, and then we can move on.
Jordan Schusterman, do you know what you put on deceit?
What do you do?
debut. And we had a debut this week. James Wood making his MLB debut, the number two overall prospect
in baseball. Is that how you say that?
Per MLB pipeline. That is how you say that, Jordan. Don't even stress about it. James Wood, a unicorn outfield prospect who is only 21 years old. He is 6'7". His legs go on forever. He is not wearing short shorts. He is just wearing long legs. He came up, played his first two games on his debut on Monday, hit a 106-mile-an-hour single in his first at-bat, posted a 30.4 foot-per-second run time, which is good, tied for the second fastest in baseball this year. Absolutely outrageous. Last night hit three balls hard over 95 miles an hour. All were groundouts. He is an absolute wonderful player. I cannot wait to see him develop. I wrote a whole thing about him over at Yahoo Sports that you can read. Sat down with James about a month ago when he was still in AAA. What a unique cat with a very fascinating developmental story. And Jordan, there is a tweet that you put on the internet machine from 2021, I believe, before James Wood was drafted, where you said, remember the name. You want to just take a little victory lap quickly?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's not even as much that. Like, it's one of those things where, especially now following the amateur draft, and sometimes you just hear about guys early on in their draft seasons where it's like, all right, this is someone you really need to pay attention to. Now, the interesting thing with James Wood is at that point, at the beginning of that early on in his senior season at IMG, I was like, he's going to end up going in the top 10. And that is not what ended up happening. He ended up having kind of an uneven senior season. But once he got into pro ball, once the Padres took him and were able to, you know, pay him over slot and make sure they got him, it was like, oh no, this is it was in there all along. And just the developments that he's made. And like, I had a conversation with someone earlier this week, just kind of talking about James Wood. It's like, how can someone that big not strike out all the time? And it's like, yeah, it's an extremely fair question. But I think that he did strike out a ton last year, but he is just so gifted and so just naturally able to make adjustments, even with his gigantic frame, that's why he is in the big leagues now, is he managed to stop striking out in a very, very real way, to the point where now his amazing power is now playing all the time. And so this is a foundational player. This is a new chapter of Nationals baseball. I know we've seen some of the players they've acquired in these trades, some of which have gone better than others. But this is a game changer, right? We talked about earlier that the Cubs are lacking a game changer. Well, James Wood could absolutely be that for the Nationals, and that is a very big deal.
One of the more interesting things he said to me when we talked, I asked about Aaron Judge, right? I was like, you are 6'7", Aaron Judge is 6'7", O'Neill Cruz is 6'7". Those are the only 6'7 players in baseball now. I asked him about Aaron Judge's swing and whether that's something he watches to try and, you know, learn how to stay short enough to the baseball. And he said, no, that he thinks of himself actually very different than Judge, that the guy he watches the most is Luis Arraez, which is a great example of, like, maybe that is why he doesn't strike out, right? Like, James Wood is thinking about being short to the baseball, right? And you could see it in a lot of his swings. And he is trusting that his swing is going to have the natural loft to it. And if he just gets the bat there, it's going to go. And when you go and you look at, like, some of the drill work that he does, there's some videos online, it's a lot of, like, short bat, inside out stuff, more than it is dropping the back shoulder, like, doing the Aaron Judge style kind of whip elevation motion. And I just thought, you know, you talked about his natural ability, like, that's going to, in a lot of ways, lead the line when we're talking about this guy, because he's 6'7". And runs like a gazelle and doesn't look like any baseball player really we've ever seen, except for, you know, Ellie and O'Neill Cruz. But the wherewithal and the intelligence to understand what type of hitter he is and what type of hitters he needs to learn from to improve his own game, I was really impressed by that when I sat down and chatted with him.
Yeah, and I think that's totally fair, but I think that goes hand in hand with the natural ability, because it's one thing to say, yeah, I'd love to just start hitting like Luis Arraez, or I'd love to start doing that, but to have the physical capabilities to immediately apply that. I mean, this is a guy that had a 33.7% strikeout rate in 87 games in Double A last year. Triple A this year, that's down to 18%, right? That's an unbelievable, like those kinds of different, those kinds of adjustments, you just, you don't see it. We talked about with Acuna last year, it's like, you know, slashing his strikeout rate in half. You have to have some kind of freak national, you know, natural ability and physical traits to apply those lessons or those that say, oh, I want to do that a little bit better and just actually do it, let alone for a 21-year-old. And we'll see if it sticks. Yeah. We'll see if he's, again, if he's able to strike out less than 20% of the time in the big leagues, he's going to be an all-star very, very fast. But even if there is an adjustment period, he's a really special and unique talent. So that's why we're obviously excited about him.
All right, one last topic before we say goodbye. This happened over the weekend. Orlando Cepeda, MLB Hall of Famer, Giants legend, passed away at the age of 86. And I just kind of wanted to give him a little bit of shine here on the podcast because, you know, it's both unfair and fair to throw his passing into the context of Willie Mays, right? Two of the greatest players in Giants history passing away within 10 days of one another. But I think Cepeda deserves a stage of his own because what he meant to the sport is really important. I mean, this is the second Black Puerto Rican player to make the bigs after Roberto Clemente, right? And so when we're talking about trailblazers who altered the way the sport looks and functions right now, that is not possible without someone like Orlando Cepeda. So he comes up, right, and he's like amazing pretty quickly and is like a perennial all-star for some really unbelievable Giants teams that Willie Mays is also on. He finishes second in the MVP in 1961 as a 23-year-old. All right. And then the next year, his manager, Alvin Dark, tells the team that the Latin players are no longer allowed to speak Spanish in the clubhouse. Right. And the idea of that today is, right, it's preposterous just because of how many, you know, Spanish speaking players we have in our game. But it's like that is the type of thing that Orlando Cepeda was facing as he was coming up and playing in the major leagues in the early 1960s. This was not, you know, now Latin American I know Latin American players still deal with like a ton of things that, you know, American-born players don't have to deal with. But what the circumstances in this environment was in the 1960s is just unimaginable compared to what we have today, right? And so I think Cepeda, beyond the numbers, beyond the stats, what he meant, what he accomplished, what he was able to kind of pave for the people that came after him is really, really remarkable.
Yeah. 100%. It is a remarkable career. You know, he goes on and he wins his MVP with the Cardinals after being traded there. But, you know, you mentioned him being that the second, you know, Black Puerto Rican player after Clemente. I mean, he's also, I mean, I don't know, the third greatest Puerto Rican player of all time. Second. I mean, he's obviously in that inner circle. And for those both to come so early on is kind of an amazing run there. Yeah. Right. Of course, you talk about Pudge and Beltran, you know, is up there, but he's right there. And it's again, like this is someone, you know, you mentioned, you know, the Giants franchise. Right. And this is where you can kind of talk about him with Mays is that franchise and for him to mean what it did there. I mean, this is a guy that has a statue there as well. There's this only statue. You need to, none of them are just getting a statue, right? It's just not, there are some great players that don't have him. And yeah. And then there's a lot with Cepeda, with his dad, that stuff that like I learned, I was reading more about when he passed away, just how his dad was also one of the greatest Puerto Rican players ever. And of course didn't have the opportunity to play in the big leagues because of what a lot of these things that we were already referring to in involving the color barrier. So it's pretty astounding baseball life, of course. And in some ways, you know, I'm glad that it's obviously horrible timing with Mays at the same time, but you know, it's a good time to reflect on that era of Giants baseball and what he meant to a lot of people.
Four statues outside the stadium, Mays, Marichal, McCovey, and Orlando Cepeda. Like you said, getting a statue, that is, not everyone gets a statue. Jake and Jordan, we do not have statues, nor will we ever get them, but we appreciate you listening to our stupid, silly podcast. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing this episode. Thank you to Sax Boy Billy for coming on and explaining Pittsburgh Pirates fandom to a couple of dum-dums. Thank you to you for listening. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We will be back on Friday, again, because we do it 3 days a week.
Yeah. Yep. Enjoy your July 4th, and we will talk to you later this week. Goodbye.